Maybe we can shift down stage towards the adjuvant situation, and I ask you the same question, which is, what are some of the areas of misconception that medical oncologists have about the issue of surgery for cure with earlier stage disease?
Yeah, actually, I think the oncologists are doing pretty good in my sense of going around the country, giving talks, et cetera, that if they get the patients, they know the YALT data, they know the ANITA data, they know the JBR10, you know, they realize that adjuvant chemotherapy makes sense, platinum doublet. And so I think they're pretty comfortable at giving platinum chemotherapy. I think the problem is if the patient's performance status has suffered, you know, or if they didn't get a kind of limited muscle sparing thoracotomy or VATS or whatever, you know, and they're kind of sagging, they're a little bit reticent, or if their kidneys took a hit to give these patients platinum. And so in those settings, then, of course, there's the age-old debate. Are we still in the curative setting, which we think we are, right? Stage 2 disease, or, and it's controversial about the 1Bs, but let's say stage 2. Those patients, hopefully 30 to 40 to 50% could be and should be cured. So you want to go give them the most bang for the buck. So most oncologists, in my experience, will give cisplatin. But then there are quite a few out there who these patients, they don't think have the reserve, and they may or may not. And so they'll give a carboplatinum doublet. You know, and for instance, the 1505 trial, you know, Heather Wakely's intergroup trial for adjuvant chemotherapy now has pretty much opened it up to any of the platinum doublets, including Alimta, truthfully, which is just going to get spliced on now as an amendment to the trial. And I don't think it's critically important, but honestly, what I think is if we wanted to, again, try to make the most difference for our patients in real time based on the information we know in the 21st century, we should say, let's look at the tumor, right? And let's let the tumor try to tell us the best drugs to give.
Where are we with that right now?
Well, where we are is, you know, people laugh at me a little less loudly in tumor board these days, but they still drag their feet a little bit. The pathologists, for the most part, are okay with this concept, and they kind of believe in it. And I think they more and more realize they need to carefully look, not so much in the adjuvant setting where they have plenty of tumor and they always give you a diagnosis of adeno or squamous or large cell or whatever it's going to be, as opposed to the advanced stage setting when sometimes they have a bronchial wash or biopsy and it's hard to make the call and they give you an NOS. I think that for the most part now, the oncologists are coming around to realizing that pharmacogenomics, there is something to it. So is the data super robust about, let's say, predicting platinum resistance by looking at nucleotide excision or platinum resistance genes such as ERCC1, EXRCC3, whatever? And the answer is, no, it's not like totally bulletproof data. There is some prospective phase 3 data in the GILT trial. There is some data, you know, in the YALT analysis, retrospective adjuvant data, that suggests if you have a gene that predicts that your ability to repair DNA damage, the addicts induced by cisplatin, the tumor can splice out the damage. The tumor goes on its happy way, so you get mostly the toxicity, unfortunately, and less of the benefit to the patient, that data looks kind of compelling. And I think there is a trend now towards asking for that analysis. Just like I think less so for RRM1 to predict gemcitabine sensitivity, but I think it's only a short matter of time before, one, the services are out there. That's part of the problem. It's hard to get these tests done in real time. Most hospital labs are not really geared up to do molecular pathology yet, but that's happening. Genzyme and other companies can offer the tests. And the same is true with EGFR testing and other things, RAS, et cetera. And I think one point to make is at the end of the day, you know, talk about the early stage patients, and one of the best trials to date was a Canadian trial that Tim Winton, thoracic surgeon, and Francis Shepherd PI'd, which looked at a navalbine platinum doublet in resected early stage patients, predominantly stage 2, right? No 3As, some 1Bs. So these are the early stage but high risk patients, right? And they gave either standard of care observation or they gave navalbine platinum for 4 cycles. And at the end of the day, the trial was markedly positive, 14, 15% 5-year survival benefit in favor of chemotherapy. But my point is, they had a few specifiers in the trial that they were going to look for molecular determinants as well as surgical staging, et cetera. And one of the molecular determinants was RAS. And it turns out that this dramatic 15% benefit for chemotherapy, if you had a RAS standard codon 12 RAS mutated tumor, that benefit was lost. There was no benefit to chemotherapy. So what we know about RAS is the EGFR pathway, for the most part, is not going to work, at least for the TKIs. And probably most of the cytotoxics are not going to work. RAS is just a bad oncogene. You know, RAS sarcoma virus is where it comes from. And when that pathway is lit on, you have AKT signal. You have a lot of pathways that are turned on. And it doesn't really matter what kind of targeted therapy upstream, if it's EGFR, CMET, whatever you try to inhibit, you're not going to shut this tumor down. And truthfully, these tumors really are not typically going to respond to standard cytotoxic inhibitors, unfortunately. And we don't have any good real RAS inhibitors yet.
I'm curious about your take on the patient who's a non-smoker or a patient who's found to have a EGFR mutation in the adjuvant setting, let's say stage two, in terms of the question of whether or not, obviously there are trials out there looking at those patients,
right?
But the issue of off-protocol use of an agent like erlotinib, do you think that that should be presented as an option?
Yeah. Well, you know, that's a perfect question. I think that off-trial, the answer is no. Because we just don't know. These drugs, erlotinib and Tarceva, you know, it's an excellent drug. And in the right patient population, it's dramatic. It's a Hail Mary lease on life, I mean, like imatinib for CML. You know, I mean, this is where oncology gets exciting, right? I mean, this is where we're supposed to be. Unfortunately, it's also a drug that has some side effects between rash and patients don't tolerate it that well. And in the adjuvant setting, where we're talking about, as you alluded to, the one trial that's looking specifically to this, the RADIANT trial, patients will get the drug for 2 years. Because patients don't fail for the first couple of years anyway. And so that's a long time to be subjecting the patients to the drug in the absence of clear-cut benefit. Now, if the RADIANT trial, which is accruing well, shows a benefit, then I think that changes everything. And I think those patients then will be offered, for instance, Tarceva or erlotinib. But right now, we don't do that off-trial. But we do put patients on the RADIANT trial.